TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Hello, welcome in. Raised by Wolves, Danny Cunningham, Manny Hill, and folks, we are in the start of the real NBA offseason.
The dog days of summer.
The dog days of summer. I don't think we can call the first week of July and the NBA draft and all of that's really not the offseason because so much is actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, the only thing that's going on is everybody seems to be withdrawing from Team USA for the FIBA World Cup later this summer, which Team USA, I am available. If you need a body, I can do it. I can't promise I'll be very good, but I'm available if you want me. That's all that seems to be going on in the world of basketball these days. Everything else is settled. Most draft picks have signed. Most free agents have signed. Just not a whole bunch is going to change, and that's really true of the Wolves. They haven't signed their second-round draft pick, and that's really the only thing left to settle with their summer. So, because of that, we're going to have to get creative on the things that we talk about here on Raised by Wolves. And one of the things that we're going to do today, and maybe a couple other times throughout the summer, is we're going to talk about some of our favorite moments from this past season. Because mm-hmm. whether or not every moment was good is up for debate. I think you can make the case that most of them were not good involving the Wolves this past season. But that doesn't mean Manny and myself don't have our favorites, because the Wolves, while they weren't necessarily a very good team, they certainly were a very entertaining team. They were a mm-hmm. team that didn't necessarily let you sleep for a minute, because it's something just always seemed to happen, whether it was controversy or whatever else. The Wolves were in the center of it for the most part this season. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about some of our favorite moments. We'll probably do five on this episode of Raised by Wolves. I think most of these ones are going to be game related. And then we can do an episode later this summer where it's five off the court favorite moments or things like that that we can get into, because there are a ton of different things that we can talk about with this team, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So let's start. And this is not necessarily in a particular order. I don't think we need to go. But let's pick our five favorite games or something of that matter, because I think there were a lot of interesting ones. The game that was Ryan Saunders' first game at the helm was certainly interesting and will be on the list. The final game before the All-Star break when the Wolves beat Houston, definitely on the list.
Mm-hmm.
The game at Target Center where the Wolves beat Golden State in overtime after nearly choking it away, and Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Kevin Durant getting into it with an official. Infinitely interesting. Derrick Rose's 50-point game. That, of course, is going to be a moment that we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
The integration of Robert Covington and Dario Saric and the new guys in that first win over New Orleans, and really that whole stretch of games, is interesting, because that's when the Wolves looked like, oh, maybe they actually could be a playoff team still. And we know how silly that looks now, but that was the case at the time.
Yeah, it totally was. And, you know, I want to start with the Derrick Rose 50-point game.
Okay, let's start there.
Because that game was kind of a weird night, because the Wolves, you know, they were wearing their throwbacks, the black
great
throwbacks.
Uniform.
Oh, they're so great, man.
Great uniform.
And it kind of took, whenever the Wolves wear those uniforms, it takes you back to the, you know, if you're a Wolves fan, a diehard Wolves fan, you followed this team for a long time, those uniforms, the Christmas tree uniforms,
yeah,
they take you back to, for lack of a better term, the glory days of the franchise.
Better days when they were going
to the playoffs every year with Kevin Garnett being, you know, one of the best players in the NBA at the time. And Derrick Rose to turn back the clock in his own way to drop 50 on a really good defensive-minded Utah Jazz team was a really impressive feat. And I think it's something that when you look at what Derrick has endured as a player with all the injuries and everything, for him to turn back that clock for one night was it was impressive.
Yeah, and it was on Halloween, which made it all the more it made it seem even a little bit more special, the fact that it was on that night. The way he did it was really impressive too. And that was actually the day I moved to Minnesota. So I wasn't I wasn't working for Score North at the time. I wasn't in the building. I wasn't covering the team. But that was the day I moved to Minnesota. So I'm obviously going to remember that forever. But the way he did it, the way that he was 4 of 7 from 3 that night, and that's not something that he was. And that was kind of a precursor to the first half of his season, because he was a really good 3-point shooter for a long time until his body kind of quit on him, for lack of a better term, and he stopped being able to knock down that shot. But I think if you asked a lot of Minnesota fans, that might be their favorite night of the season. Because at that point, there was so much going on. That was one of the games that Jimmy Butler decided not to play in.
Mm-hmm.
So Derrick Rose got the start because of that. And Jeff Teague also was injured, I do believe, that night. He didn't play. So that's why he saw as many minutes as he did. And once he had it going on and down the stretch, he was terrific. That might be the best game that Derrick Rose has ever played.
Yeah, it might be.
Definitely
and
one of them.
I think it was his first, because I don't think he ever had a 50-point game in Chicago, did he? Was that a
he
career?
He did not.
I
that
think
was
that ended
his
up being
career
high.
High.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the three-point shooting, you mentioned that, is what really stands out to me about this performance. And, you know, you mentioned the first half of his season, because this was a guy that was career below 30% three-point shooter. Like, he's just not a three-point shooter.
Bad.
He's not just bad.
He was good at a lot of things in his prime.
Yep.
When he was younger, Derrick Rose was good at a lot of things. No, for 0 days in his NBA life had he been a good three-point shooter.
And for basically the first half of the season up until, you know, the All-Star break, basically, he was 40-plus percent.
He was an elite three-point shooter for the first half of the
season. We were talking about, man, should Derrick Rose jump in the three-point contest?
Yeah,
how crazy
really
would that
good.
Be? Yeah, he was fantastic. And you mentioned 4-7 that night. To be able to pull that off for that stretch of games in the at least a half of the season when you've never been known for that at all, was really impressive. And I think that night specifically sort of spoke to that type of first half. And really it represented sort of a revitalization, so to speak, of Derrick's career. Because
yeah.
It had, I mean, you talked about when the Cavs let him go the season before. He was, he was like at a local college gym in
Cleveland?
Yeah,
he was at Cleveland State. He was at Cleveland State shooting with his guy Art, who's mm-hmm. always around him and one of the members of his inner circle. He was shooting at Cleveland State because the Cavs had traded him to Utah as part of the package for Rodney Hood
mm-hmm.
in Cleveland. And then the Jazz waived him, and he was essentially out of the league for a month before the Wolves came calling, and he signed a rest of the season contract with them.
And this was the youngest MVP in league history. And then you fast forward, you know, 6-7 years, and there he is. I mean, it's so for him to have that performance to sort of revitalize his career after it, you know, had gone down by the wayside is it was really impressive. It was a special night, I think.
One of my favorite things on nights like that to look at is the box score. Not mm-hmm. necessarily to see Derrick Rose's 50 points, because that's always going to stand out. And really, if you just take away Derrick's line from that night, it's a really interesting box score, because Carl had one of the better games to that point. I mean, I realize it was game number 8, but he played really well that night. He had 28 points and 16 boards, and it gets overlooked because of what Derrick Rose did. If you look at the guys that played off the bench on that night too,
mm-hmm.
CJ Williams played 7 minutes.
I'm
James Nunnally,
yeah. Oh,
James Nunnally played 21 and a half minutes, while Luol Deng, Kata Bates-Diop didn't play. Jeff Teague was hurt, and Tyus wasn't around the team. I forget what was going on for Tyus that night, but he wasn't with the team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's strange enough in itself.
Yeah, and a guy like James Nunnally, who did not even finish the year with the team, and he's played 21 minutes on this night early in the season. It was amazing. And, you know, Josh Okogie starting the game. And this was sort of the early, when we got to see Josh Okogie early on, you know, for that stretch. And he was sort of wowing us with his defense and his energy and everything that he was bringing to the table early. And, you know, obviously he hit sort of a bad stretch where he wasn't shooting well and Tibbs wouldn't play him most of the time and that sort of thing. But that was one of those first early games where we got to look at Josh Okogie and we're like, oh, wow, this is a good player that they found with the 20th pick in the draft.
And he really only played because Jimmy Butler didn't feel like playing that night.
Right.
Jimmy
yep.
Butler was still on the team at this point. They hadn't yet traded him. Josh Okogie was in the starting lineup and played almost 37 minutes because Jimmy Butler didn't feel like coming out of the locker room.
Yeah, that was amazing. That
All
was
right.
a special night.
All right, next moment for us. Let's go with the game against Houston right prior to the All-Star break, because
mm-hmm.
that was one where the Wolves were kind of still on the edge of the playoff race at that point. They weren't necessarily all the way out of it, but it was a lot of these games, and I realize it was February 13th, I think, that game against the Rockets. That's the night it was.
Yep.
A lot of those games started to feel like must-win games for the Wolves, and they felt like games that were going to have a big impact on whether or not that where this team was going to be. They were after the win, they were 27-30, so they were really on the cusp of being in playoff contention. And James Harden was in the middle of his 30-point streak. He had 42 that night. Mm-hmm. Now, it took him 34 shots to get there, and he was 8. He took 22 threes in that game.
He was 8 for 22.
He was 8 for 22 from 3. But the thing I'm always going to remember about that night was, one, how well Josh Okogie's block of Harden's obviously going to be it, but just how well he played in general. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Teague had a hell of a game that night. Like, Josh Okogie had 16 points on, he took 15 shots, which was, has to be more than almost any other game he played in. And Jeff Teague, that was the best Jeff Teague game I think that we had all season. He had 27-12.
Yeah, that was impressive. You know, I going back to the Harden thing too. I mean, Harden, you finished with 42 points. What's one of the things? I mean, James Harden's good at a number of things, mm-hmm. but what's one of the things he's always been elite at?
Getting to
the free throw line, and he only shot 4 free throws.
Yeah, they did a terrific job on James Harden that game. They were really outstanding. The whole starting five, this was also like kind of peak Luol Deng can play basketball.
Yeah.
He played 36 minutes that yes. night, had 13 points. This was peak Luol Deng's actually an NBA player still, and Tibbs was ignoring him. And that might have been one of the things. I'm not positive what I wrote this night. But I'm pretty sure it was Josh Okogie should have been playing a lot, and Luol Deng can still hoop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this was crazy. I'm looking at the starting lineup. So you got Kat, Jeff Teague, who was great. Kat was great, too, obviously. Okogie played really well. Dario Saric was the starter. Luol Deng was just, but then I'm looking at who played on the bench, and it's Rose, and it's Gibson, Anthony Tolliver. Jared Bayless played 11 minutes. Isaiah Cannon was in the middle of one of his 10 days with the Wolves, and he played 5 minutes, and Gorgui Dieng only played a minute and 50 seconds in this game, and there was no Andrew Wiggins in this game either.
Yeah, Andrew was, I believe he was sick.
Okay.
If I recall, I believe he had the flu or something, because he missed a couple of games around this time with an mm-hmm. illness of some sort, and Jared Bayless was so bad that night. He played 11 minutes, one assist, no other stats, minus 13.
Minus 13.
Wow. Everyone else, except for Gorgui, who only played, he played a minute and 50 in the first half and then was not in the rotation. It didn't go well, and they didn't play him the rest of the time. But everyone else was good. Gorgui couldn't hang, and Jared Bayless was horrendous. That's why Isaiah Cannon got the 5.5 minutes, because of how bad Jared Bayless was.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing when you look at, I think these first two games that we've talked about really speak to, in some ways, all of the turmoil that was going on with this team, because the lineups were so different on a nightly basis, it seemed like, and guys were playing that just really, let's be honest, really had no business playing at that point, but they were only playing because of, you know, injuries and, you know, trades that may have been made and things like that. And you know, it really, I think these first two games we've talked about really speak to just how much turmoil was really going on with this team over the course of the season.
Yeah, a ton. And
yeah.
This was really the night that they felt most together. This was the night that felt like, okay, maybe this team, if they can bottle this up, they can mm-hmm. actually be pretty good. This might have been the peak of just Wolves' hope for 2019.
And I think there was still a thought at this point of the season that, you know, maybe we'll see Robert Covington again. If they can get him back in the lineup, then that could certainly help their chances of maybe getting to the playoffs. But, you know, as we know, we never saw Roko again for the rest of the season.
Yeah. All right, up next.
Up next, I've got the win over the Golden State Warriors.
Okay, yeah, that was a wild night. Mm-hmm. That was a really wild night. The way that the Warriors stormed back and tied the game, Steph hit that corner three.
Weren't the Wolves were up by like 11 with like a minute 50
I don't know
or something
that it
like
was
that.
Quite
it was
that big of a lead.
But it was a pretty sizable lead with like under 2 minutes left that they blew.
It was multiple possessions. They were up multiple possessions late. Steph hit, well, that I might be getting overtime confused with. So they were winning 113-106 with 2:27 left after a Josh Okogie dunk.
Okay.
Then Steph hit a three. Tolliver went 2 out of 3 from the line Andre Iguodala had a dunk. Bayless missed back-to-back threes. Steph made another three. Then Draymond hit a free throw to tie it at 115. And then the Wolves, Andrew Wiggins missed a jumper to try and win the game as the buzzer sounded in regulation and missed. And then in overtime, the Wolves jumped up 128 to 119.
That's what I'm thinking of.
A minute 41 left Josh Okogie three.
Yep.
Josh Okogie, I believe, hit a corner three from Jared Bayless. Then Steph Curry hit a three. Steph Curry hit another three. Draymond made a layup. And then Steph Curry hit a three just before the buzzer. There were, I want to say there were tenths of a second left when that went in. And then that was when Carl got fouled on the inbounds play on really, I don't know that it really should have been called a foul.
Yeah.
But the Warriors were actively making fun of the referees while this was all ongoing. And I will never forget watching that. But it was, I was sitting next to Michael Lee of The Athletic. He was in town because they played the 76ers the next night.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were in town to watch the Jimmy Butler reunion with the Wolves. And it was an unbelievable type of game. I looked at him when the Wolves went up 128 to 119. He looks at me, he goes, "This is over." Because he also said it in regulation. When the Wolves were up like seven in regulation, when they were up the 113 to 106 with 2.5 minutes left, he's like, "This game's over." I look right back at him, I go, "No, it ain't."
"Just wait."
I said, "Just wait. We'll see." And then they came back and he turned around and looked at me, he goes, "You've got to be kidding me." And then
it's the Warriors.
It happened again in overtime. And as soon as Steph hit that three, I looked at him. He just looked at me with his jaw on the floor.
I was there that night with my nephews. My sister had gotten my nephews tickets to the game for Christmas. And, you know, she had gotten me my ticket as well, just sort of a Christmas present for all three of us.
Sure.
And I remember when Steph hit the three to tie the game at 130, I looked at my nephews. And my older nephew, Jason, who's 16 years old, he just started laughing. He just started laughing because it's just like, come on. Like, you got to be. I was like, it's the Warriors, man.
It's how it goes with them, man.
It's the Warriors, and also it's the Wolves.
Yep.
You combine those two teams, you combine those two factors together, and this is what happens. So, yeah, that was an amazing night, and it was fun, and the controversy behind it, behind the foul call by Cat, who did not play well that night, by the way.
No.
He was not playing well at all.
No, he's had better games than that one for sure. Let's see I forget what his final line was. Let me pull it up here.
15 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists, but he shot 5 of 17 from the floor and 0 of 5 from 3.
Yeah. Okogie played well. He had 21. He was 3 of 5 from 3. Wiggins had 24, but
Gorgie had a nice game.
Gorgie had a nice game coming off the bench.
Yeah.
But that was a really impressive win. This was also kind of like peak. Oh, Jared Bayless is kind of a basketball player. He had 17 in that game. That was one of his best nights. Tolliver was 3 of 4. I mean, they were 14 of 38 from 3. But one of the problems that the Wolves had is they gave up too many three-pointers. And the Warriors knocked down 18 that night.
Yeah, that seemed to have been a problem with the Wolves over the last few years of just giving up too many three-pointers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, what do we got next?
All right, up next we're going to go to Ryan Saunders' first game, the one against Oklahoma City, because that was one that obviously meant a little bit more to this franchise than I think any of the other 81 games did. It was a game that you could tell it meant a lot to those guys, and I'm never going to forget just how good Andrew Wiggins really was that night. Because
it was the best game of his career, man.
You can certainly make that case. I don't necessarily know. I haven't watched every single game of his career, but you can make a case, and I'm not going to argue with you, that certainly could have been the best night of his career.
Yeah, I think it was the best night of his career because I think that was a night. Obviously, you know, he scored 40 points that night, and obviously you don't expect any player in the NBA to just go out and drop 40 every single night. But that was, I think that performance represented the most of, like, what we've always envisioned Andrew Wiggins to be.
Sure.
And obviously he certainly has not lived up to any of that. But when you look at the defense that he played, the rebounding, the playmaking, just he just seemed to make every single play that you needed him to make to win that game. And that, I think it just represented everything that he has been thought to eventually become, and obviously he just has not become that at all.
Yeah, and aside from just scoring 40 points, but the 40-point part wasn't necessarily surprising because we've seen Andrew be able to do that before. It's not mm-hmm. like this was his first scoring outburst.
Right.
But the way he did it, where he got to the line 18 times, yeah. and aside from that, he had 10 rebounds. Like mm-hmm. Andrew Wiggins had a double-double. That's the rarity. It's not that he scored 40 points. It's that he did everything else that people are clamoring him for him to really do.
Yeah.
Aside from that, this was also sort of in the middle of Carl's really difficulty surviving the foul trouble that he had found mm-hmm. himself in for much of the season. He only played 24 minutes, had 5 fouls.
Yeah.
That kind of summed up his night.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, going back to Wiggins, too, with the free throws, he went 16 of 18 at the free throw line.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of when Andrew was a rookie, he was actually one of the best in the NBA at getting to the free throw line.
Yeah.
And that was something that he always seemed to be able to hang his hat on. Like, okay, he's not a great three-point shooter, and, you know, he's still a little bit raw, but, man, he's athletic, and he can cut and get to the basket and draw fouls and get to the free throw line. And we've seen over the last couple of years, obviously, that his free throw rate has gone down. And that for that one night, it was like, yes, Andrew, this is what we want you to be. This is the type of player. You get to the free throw line. You're aggressive. You're rebounding. You're doing all these little things aside from just scoring 40 points. And, again, we just have not – we haven't seen – well, hell, we haven't really seen it since.
No, and this was also the – you know what? I think he flipped a switch.
Yeah.
I think Ryan
yes.
got to him.
Yeah.
Ryan got to Andrew. And
yep.
we know that that hasn't necessarily been the case yet. Andrew still has a long way to go. But that was not like this is what the future of Andrew Wiggins could look like.
Yeah, no, and it was just a fun night overall, and you know Ryan's the first set that they run of the game. I think it's 452 twist. I think is what they call it for. You know, that was one of Flip's plays that he always ran, and it was just special when they mobbed him and threw the water on him as he came into the locker room and everything, and it was if anything. Again, we don't know how good of a coach Ryan is going to be. We'll find out certainly over the next couple of years.
Definitely.
But for that night, at least, it was just really cool, I think, for him and really cool for the organization because they had been through a lot, obviously, with the Jimmy stuff and Tibbs getting fired, you know, two nights before. I mean, it was a pretty fun night, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely was. Do you want to give the last one or do you want me to pick the last one here?
I'll let you pick the last one.
All right, so the last one I'm going to pick was actually one of the worst games I watched all year. It was the night of Carl's buzzer beater against the Memphis Grizzlies. They won that game in overtime, 99-97. It was one of the worst games I watched all year. no hyperbole here. Like, this game was horrendous to watch.
But January 30th.
Yes, January 30th. It was minus 57 with a wind chill.
Oof.
It was disgusting.
It was
terrible. It was one of the worst days to be in Minnesota. The Wolves didn't play well, and they found a way to win. This, again, is like peak Jared Bayless. Oh, he can play basketball. He had 19 points and 12 assists and 7 rebounds. Jared Bayless, I remember sitting next to John Krasinski of The Athletic. We were on triple double watch for Jared Bayless. Like we were not okay. I was kind of willing him to get rebounds because I wanted to write about Jared Bayless getting a triple double, but he didn't quite get there. But Carl didn't necessarily play well, and Marc Gasol has always been a really difficult matchup mm-hmm. for him. And this was one of Marc Gasol's final games with Memphis before they traded him to Toronto, where he became a champion, obviously. But this was when you know they had a few opportunities down the stretch of the season, or even in 2019, to set up Carl for game-winning shots, and they could never get the ball into his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of them where the play – Carl did end up hitting the buzzer beater, but it wasn't exactly because they got him the ball correctly.
Right.
Like, the only reason Carl found himself with the ball at the end of overtime was because Andrew Wiggins missed a jumper from 23 feet.
Carl
got the offensive
rebound.
Board, and – nail the 14-footer from the baseline as time expired. But, like, as regulation ended, Carl didn't have the opportunity to win the game. Jared Bayless took two shots in the final 3 seconds and missed them both.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and what stands out about this game, too, is all that you just mentioned, but also it's just like it speaks to Wolves-Grizzlies, too.
Oh, yeah, it was terrible.
Like, every time, as long as the grit-and-grind era and Gasol and Conley were sort of the last two guys remaining from that era of Grizzlies basketball, but as long as the Grizzlies have been the grit-and-grind Grizzlies, every time they play the Wolves, it's always low scoring, grinded out, frustrating for the Wolves, you know, frustrating nights for Cat, frustrating night for Wiggins, low scoring, all that stuff. And this night, ugly, sloppy, it's cold out. It just, that game that night just represented everything that was Wolves Grizzlies.
It was so cold out. I was scared to start my car that day. I took a lift from my apartment to the arena.
I remember you telling me that,
because I didn't want to even bother trying to, one, open my car doors, to start my car. It hurt to breathe going outside. It was that cold.
Welcome to Minnesota, Danny.
That was bad. That was the feels like temperature on that day was 168 degrees less than it was this past Friday.
Growing up in Cleveland, did you ever have a cold night like that? I mean, because
it's
right on the lake.
Minus 57.
But you guys were on the lake.
It got cold. It got down to like once or twice a winter it would go below zero, but not like that. We got a lot of snow. We might have gotten maybe a little bit more snow other than the month of February was horrendous here. But
yeah.
I grew up in an area where we got a lot of snow, but it didn't necessarily get to minus 57 ever.
Yeah. Welcome to Minnesota,
it
Danny.
It was cold, man.
It was great.
Any other fun moments you want to get to, or are we going to get out of here?
I think we'll get out of here. We'll explore some more fun off-the-court moments that we can maybe remember from this past season in a future episode, perhaps.
Yeah, certainly we will be doing that throughout the course of the summer, because that's what we're going to have to do here.
Dog days of summer, man.
The dog days of summer are here. That's Manny Hill. I'm Danny Cunningham. This is Raised by Wolves. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or the all-new Score North mobile app. That's available both on Apple and Android devices. And guess what? It is completely free. So be sure to download that if you don't already have it. And we'll talk to you next time.